Well, Tennessee has become the first state to pass a state law that permits English-only policies in the workplace. The law says that it's not discriminatory for an employer to mandate that all employees speak English only while they're at work. Now, this is the first state law, but already some 30 cities across the country have implemented English-only ordinances for governments and businesses in their jurisdiction. We're joined today by Brandon Gee. He's a staff writer for the Nashville Business Journal. He tells us that most businesses in Tennessee are actually against the law. We're going to talk to Brandon in just a minute. We're also joined by Arnado Valera, an immigration attorney. Mr. Valera is representing three Filipino nurses who were fired last month for speaking their native language Tagalog during their lunch break at Bon Secours Hospital in Baltimore. Not when they were talking to patients, but on lunch. Welcome to you both.
Good morning.
Brandon, in Tennessee, let me start with you. What does the law actually mean for businesses in Tennessee? What are they saying?
Well, it actually, the proponents would say that all it does is mirror the existing rules that the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission has in place that allow businesses to have an English-only rule if it's necessary to for safety reasons, if you had workers working on a piece of machinery and they need to be able to communicate, or for a business necessity reason, if you were behind the sales desk. But many groups are concerned because while they are claiming to mirror that language, they actually passed a law that is much more vague, and the wording may open up the possibility of businesses putting in place policies that seem like they'd be okay under this state law that just passed, but could actually run afoul of the federal regulations that prevent discriminatory policies.
Have we wound up in a situation here with like the Chamber of Commerce and big business on one side saying we don't actually like this new law, and people for tougher immigration on the other side saying no, it's necessary?
Absolutely. The four biggest chambers of commerce in this state have pretty consistently spoken out against any sort of English-only laws. They think that they're unfriendly and undermine their efforts to recruit multinational firms to the state. Some of the biggest businesses in Nashville are Bridgestone America, is a Japanese firm, and Nissan, and firms like Volkswagen. So they see this as not really accomplishing anything since it's since federal law covers this, and but sending the message nonetheless that might not be the most welcoming message they'd like to send.
And yet it's the state law already, so it's interesting that Nissan and Bridgestone, big companies, and the Chamber of Commerce seem to have lost this round. That's a little bit rare in state government. Arnado Valero, lawyer, I want to turn to you. You just heard sort of the business perspective for these types of English-only policies, but I want the workers' perspective from you. You have three clients, three Filipino nurses. Now, they work at a hospital that has an English-only policy. I can see why. You're talking to patients. If patients go to the hospital, you may want to make sure also that communications between doctors and nurses, people doing health care, is in one language. But these ladies apparently were in the break room.
That's correct. And in fact, there were no patients that were at risk, and they are not doing this in the presence of the patient. But the main objection on this type of rule is that it is clearly a burdensome term and condition of employment. And my clients believe that it violates the Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964.
Now,
pertaining to discrimination.
Now, are they okay with the part of this law? I sort of editorialize saying it kind of makes sense. Doctors and nurses all speaking the same language, communicating effectively. Are your clients on board with that part of it?
Yes, for example, there's no objection English being an official language, but you do not apply it in so broad as it is they're applying right now, that it even covers innocent gestures or remarks that has nothing to do or direct bearing with the performance of their duties. So in other words, there are so many the conversations that were done innocently, which has nothing to do with the performance of their jobs. And prohibiting such is not only against cultural diversity, which any employer, most of our hospital facilities in the U.S. are embracing, is that it is actually not a business necessity to do so, considering that there are patients, for example, in a hospital or a clinic that sometimes speaks in different languages when they enter the hospital, and you need translators to do so.
Well, to that point, your clients, Arnedo Valero, work at Bon Secours Hospital. We asked for a representative to come on the air. Instead, the hospital gave us a written statement. I want to read it now. Here's a written statement from Bon Secours Hospital. Since English is the principal language of our patients and employees, Bon Secours' English language policy, like that of so many other healthcare providers, is in place to ensure clear, effective communications among caregivers while performing their job responsibilities in order to protect patients and minimize safety risks. If a patient is not comfortable communicating in English, it is Bon Secours' policy to provide translation services to the extent possible, which is not too different from what you just said. We want to remind people you can read the entire statement from the hospital from Bon Secours on our website, thetakeaway.org. And I would just turn it back on
you. Correct. I mean, there's no objection about that directive.
Well, let me turn it back on you for a second, though, Arne. How is this different from workplaces that have a uniform policy? Everybody wears blue shirts and khaki pants at Best Buy, for instance.
But here's the problem. The problem here is this directive, this kind of directive of prohibiting foreign languages or other dialects, for example, to be spoken even during break times, you know, this is very broad. This is so vague. So there is no specific standards here to be followed. So what if, for example, one of the family members call a nurse that works in a hospital and there is an emergency in their house and they're trying to speak in their Tagalog language or in any foreign language for that matter? Is that prohibited? Is that a danger? Dangerous situation for the hospital who no patients were placed.
Well, let me ask that to
absolutely not.
Well, let me ask that to Brandon G, a staff writer for the Nashville Business Journal. Has this? Is there any evidence that this new law has been enforced for any language other than Spanish?
I've not heard of that yet. And again, you know, the province would say this is just helping protect businesses from frivolous lawsuits, you know, when they really need to have this policy. But, you know, provisions were taken out that used to say that, you know, you couldn't do this in the break room or on the lunch break. So, you know, you got people really scared that we're going to see similar lawsuits like the one there in Baltimore.
Businesses are watching. They're watching in Tennessee. They're watching in Baltimore. A new law in Tennessee saying English only in the workplace. It's the first state law to say that. Brandon G., staff writer for the Nashville Business Journal, and Arnedo Valera, an immigration lawyer. He has three clients who were fired for speaking Tagalog, that's the official language of the Philippines, during their lunch break at the hospital in Baltimore. You can read the full statement by the hospital again by visiting our website at thetakeaway.org.
And we're wondering what your policy is at your workplace. Do you have an English-only policy there? And how does that work out? Let us know at 8778-MY-TAKE. Actually, at our website is a lot of information about a lot of the great conversations we've had this morning. You can check that all out at thetakeaway.org. I'm Celeste Headley.
And I'm Todd Zwillikin for John Hockenberry. It's a Takeaway.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.